Transform Together, das Podcast-Meetup. Von und mit Johannes Schartau und Holisticon.
Hi and welcome to episode number 3 of Transform Together, the Holisticon podcast meetup. My name is Johannes Schartau and today I will be talking to Anton Skornjakov.
Hey.
Anton is a business coach, entrepreneur and co-founder of Agile.coach. He has played a key role in spreading liberating structures across Europe, and he's the author of The Art of Slicing Work, a book packed with stories, lessons, and principles drawn from his experience coaching nearly 100 organizations and thousands of people. If you want your organization to respond faster and deliver value sooner, slicing work into smaller, meaningful packages is essential. But how do you actually do that in practice? In this episode of the Transform Together podcast, I sit down with Anton to explore exactly this question. We'll dig into why slicing work is often so challenging, what pitfalls to avoid, and which techniques really help teams move quickly. And in the interactive part, Anton will guide participants through hands-on exercises so they can try some of these techniques for themselves. Anton, I am thrilled that you could make it. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we want to get into this. Ready? Great.
Yeah.
Your book is called The Art of Slicing Work. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about?
Right. So depending on who you are, who is listening to, there's two ways I'd like to explain it, coming from my experience talking about it now. So for most people in the Agile bubble, so if you're familiar with Agile methodologies and Scrum, slicing is more than just splitting user stories, because that's what most people associate with this word. Slicing is much, much broader. It's about how to break up a larger endeavor or a project or a product initiative into increments, into what we call increments in the Agile world, so that we can, within a short amount of time, weeks, at most a month, deliver something and learn from it. And obviously, if you are an experienced Agile practitioner, you should be quite experienced with this. And this is actually that to most people from the Agile bubble comes very intuitively. However, when I speak about this this skill with people from the outside of our bubble, what people typically think of, and what people actually know of is having, when they approach a risky thing in their project, is to have something like a pilot project. So if you have a project and you know there are some risks in there, so you do a pilot with which you basically test all the risks, but then after the pilot is done, you have the traditional project. And if you are familiar with this kind of approach, then to use slicing would be something like, instead of having one pilot project, delivering your whole project with little pilots of 2 weeks, and basically building it up. And from my point of view, this is the new part of what I wanted to add with this book, is basically the perspective that we do not have to talk that much about roles and meetings and responsibilities when we want an organization to become more adaptive. What we want to talk about first is actually the results that we're going to be delivering. And this topic, from my point of view, is so much is deeply underrepresented. In our community.
I completely agree. I'm always fascinated by this, that this is one of the topics that seems to kind of just fall off people's radars, or they have never even thought about this. And so I would be super interested, because when I raise this with clients, what I often hear is something like, we've never done this in the past, or we are a really big organization, so we have big projects, and that's mm-hmm. just the nature of this. So, or even like, it's more efficient to pack a lot of things into fewer releases. And then like the efficiency optimization factor comes into play. So what's your response to that?
Ooh, so there is a couple of them. So there is several systemic thinking parts why this actually happens to larger companies. And I would maybe, I'm not sure we have the time to take both of them because maybe we want to look at also an example. But so one of the things that typically happens in a large organization is you have a lot of stakeholders, internal stakeholders and external stakeholders whenever you drive a project. And so the larger the project is, the more there are different topics that you want to agree. You want to have an agreement upon with all the stakeholders, right? So it so and if you know anything about kind of how networks work, if you add one more stakeholder into a question with 10 already existing stakeholders, that the amount of communication that is actually growing, it's quadrupling. So it's going with not linearly, but
It's exploding.
it's
That's
exploding.
what it is,
Exactly. So what happens basically is people realize, okay, well, there is a lot of topics that we need to agree upon. But if the project is unpredictable in its nature, no matter how much you talk, and you invest a lot of time in talking, because talking, the more people are there, the more you need to talk. But you're still going to be surprised by something while the project is moving on. And so the project is going to be derailed by this surprise, and the more you've done talking in the beginning, the harder it will get to change anything while you are on your way, because you know you are following a way that was already agreed upon by so much stakeholder negotiation and conversations. So once the project is basically done and you do lessons learned, what you basically learn from this is, well, we haven't done enough talking, right? Because the nature of complexity is that afterwards it always seems obvious that there was one question that you did not fix. So you think by investing more time up front, talking more, you can reduce this amount of risk. And so this is the dynamics that actually creates this in large organizations, that people with more and more experience actually tend to invest more and more time in planning, while this reduces their ability to be adaptable. So that the larger the organization, larger the project, the more natural it is. And the other thing that you ask is like, so how does it make sense? So maybe that's a little bit more complicated, but it's about the economics of feedback. So whenever we have some decision that we make, right? And when we build a product, when we build a service, we make a lot of decisions. Like continuously, we make decisions about what we think our customers will want or what we think a process change in our organization will work. And every time we try it out, there is transaction cost. To try something out, to show something to your customer, there is a lot of costs involved in that. And the more you can show your customer at once, the cheaper it is to check every individual thing that you created, right? So if you just think about that, it makes total sense to just check very rarely, have huge batches. What you obviously forget with this is the holding costs. So every decision that you have not checked is basically another assumption that you are base that you base your further building of making new decisions on. So the risk there is also, or the holding cost, if you look at this economically, is basically also growing exponentially. This time is not quadruply, but actually exponentially. So, and if you look at this, basically, you will realize there is a very small batch that you want to go for, but that's like, you know, that would be much easier to explain if we had something to draw upon. So, but if you just Google Don Reynolds and holding cost versus transaction cost, you will definitely see the right picture in Google.
Nice. For people just listening, I have a big grin on my face because it's one of my favorite topics, and I'm always I love this moment when you show this to people, and there's this in the beginning, it's like, yeah, I know about this, but, and then there's this click moment where it's just like, oh yeah, I'm starting to get this. So let's assume you've sold me. I'm interested. It makes sense to me. How do I get this started? So we maybe like we come from a very traditional project-oriented background. We do these big batches. What are some ways that I could get some benefit out of this?
So the simplest way to start to do it is something called pre-mortem. So before you start your project, think about the different ways it can fail. It's a very painful exercise, but it doesn't have to take that long. It's just 15 minutes, and you basically put people together who maybe have already done something like that before, so have experienced things fail, or you basically put into a room as many perspectives as possible, and you ask those people for like 15 minutes. So imagine this thing that we are starting to do here for the next two years. It goes wrong. What could go wrong? And then you basically collect a lot of things, and all of the things that people can think of. Customers don't like it. This technology doesn't work. If we show this to these people, they don't agree with it. The partner that we need in order for this to work will simply not sign the contract with us because for them it's not advantageous to go along with this. And once you've written all these things down, you can ask yourself, so what could be the smallest amount of thing that we can actually build and actually try out in order to show that this risk isn't there, or if this risk is there, to actually get this information as early as possible. And when you do this, it's very solution focused, it's very result focused, and you don't have to have any discussions about agility in this moment, right? So you're very solution focused, like you want to reduce risk, right? That's what it's about. And but what you end up with is basically different slices. The things that you're going to end up with are already slices. Because they are results that deliver value, at least they reduce risk. And what typically happens in organizations is that the first slice that you will come up with, it's going to be too big. So if you're going to ask yourself, well, when I'm going to be able to deliver this, you still got to get an answer like half a year at least, like we need to do this. Yeah. So then you need to ask yourself, well, what are we here doing? Kind of the typical strategy of an organization is to be too big. Like, so there are some strategies to make it smaller. So you can, instead of doing something for everyone, you can say, well, what could be 10 people or what could be two companies that we already work with that we can try this out with? Or so this is kind of reduction of a target audience. Or you can think of a reduction of the actual impact. So instead of saying they actually buy something from us, you can say, well, how can we actually make sure... So for example, how can we make them sign a letter of intent with us, or at least commit to investing two of their employees to actually work on us with this, even though they may not buy us, but this is already quite a big investment. So this will be a lower impact. There are more patterns like the ones that I've just explained that will help you reduce the slice. And once you start doing this, you will have a myriad of different possible results. And then the question is going to be, you know, what do we start with? Which one is the most risky one? And then from there, there is the typical product owner question, how do we prioritize? This is going to be the one that you decide.
Nice. Gets me all excited. do you have an example of how this completely changed the game for a team, or any big aha moment in the past where maybe a company or a team, they were used to just thinking these big batches, and then there was something that they broke off, or like a slice that they made and they were just like, oh, this is different.
I'd like to tell two. One of them connected with software, the one of them not connected with software.
You can tell five if you want.
Yeah, great. Because this whole book is about actually giving people examples. Because what I find most effective is actually not this whole talking. Because once you understand it, you can see all the world. But you need to get a lot of examples. You need to see this. And that's, so one example was one organization that is basically driving people from A to B in Germany. And in whole Europe, and they are doing this having buses, and they had the idea that they want to strengthen their brand awareness, and the idea was to actually have all the drivers of those buses wear a t-shirt with their big brand on it. Right, so there was this idea, and I worked with this group, and they said, well, what do we have to do? Well, we need to find a place to buy 100,000 of t-shirts, because this is the amount of drivers, and then we have to think about how do we distribute all those t-shirts to the drivers, how do we make sure that they're clean, how do we, you know, and I was like, okay, let's assume it doesn't work. like what if this is a hypothesis that doesn't work? So, and you know, we did something like a pre-mortem with them, and yada yada yada. What they ended up doing was basically actually having just one organization, because they do not have the drivers themselves. So they have a lot of companies that work with them, the drive for them. And so one of the things that they had to find out is basically, is drivers wearing t-shirts actually going to increase brand awareness, right? So that's something right. you can test with just 10 bus drivers.
Yeah,
for a month.
And imagine there is a possibility that this could not work.
Yeah, imagine how many t-shirts, how many t-shirts. But and then there is also things that you and this is the most important part, because you know we often talk about complexity, things being surprising. This kind of thing is maybe to the two of us, it's not surprising, because it's kind of this is the standard hypothesis that what we think is going to work. Right, but there is also something surprising that can come up here, because they once you do that, you have to negotiate with all those bus driving companies to change the contracts that you have with them, because they have to be contractually obligated. And now it becomes the tricky thing can be not just the drivers actually wearing the t-shirts, but you making sure that this actually becomes part of the contract. And how do you put it in the contract? And is the contract strong enough so the bus drivers actually wear the t-shirts? So there is so many things that can pop up there that are completely unpredictable at the beginning, that you really don't want to buy the 100,000 t-shirts in the beginning. It's really not the first thing to do if you think about it. And so for them it was a big aha moment. Actually, they kind of changed how the project went. Another thing that's a completely different company. It also has something to do with buses, but it's actually a digital company. So this is an online company where people can find a way from A to B to how to get there using different buses or maybe even trains and sometimes even flights. And these guys, very successful. But they've built an engine to for their search in the very beginning, like in the very first half a year of their startup. And if you've done anything with search of like search algorithms of how to get from A to B, you will know this is a mathematically not solved question. So this question is mathematically not completely solved.
Yeah,
how
it's one of those
best route.
It's one of those topics where it's just I just punch in an address and it finds it for me, and in the background it's a nightmare.
Yeah, and it's even a scientific question. So there is so this company they were already quite successful, or they are still quite successful commercially, but then they wanted to kind of create a new search engine. So they hired a lot of people with PhDs, like really clever people, and these people worked for a year. And when I joined the company, I basically told them that there is this typical pattern in a software place. There is a pattern of walking skeletons, so that you start with a Hello World application. You do not start with building the most complicated part. You start where the surface, where your application surfaces and actually touches and is actually somehow visible. And then you go deeper from there. You mock basically all the architecture, and so for them it meant they already had some kind of scientifically quite sophisticated search engine, but it was never connected with the actual search that people actually did outside. And so I said, so why don't we like the actual way for us to do it was would not to create any sophisticated search, but actually to create some kind of search that actually connects to the search outside, and maybe, for example, ensure that the search result number 1,500 first is the one that comes from our algorithm. And in the beginning it can be really dumb, but no client will ever go to the 1,500 first search result, right? So so why don't we do that? Why don't we just do that? And they ended up not being able to connect their machine, their thing, to the actual search result for half a year. And in the end, because you think, why? What is the problem? Well, the problem is that the actual search that people are using is also moving on, right? Because all of the features that the platform is actually developing, they show up. They show up in the real search. So if you develop this algorithm and connect it to the outer world, you have to kind of keep you have to keep track with them. You have to and simply solving this first part completely changed how they went on with their project, but ensured that actually results were possible and you know, basically it showed a lot of risks that for especially for scientists were not possible. So this whole slicing, maybe what you can get out of this is this whole slicing is about really, really becoming pragmatic. It is why I like it so much, because it connects a lot to people who actually run a business, because they very often want really pragmatic results. And it completely connects to all the agility, which is very often something we hear a lot of from companies who actually fire all people who do anything with agile, because they fail to connect all of the things that we bring to the results. So that's why kind of we start with that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that lots of the clients that I work with, what they say is, one of our biggest problems is that we deliver and it doesn't manifest the value that we thought it would. And what you just described is that those are two such typical examples of what we often see, that we have so many assumptions and then we build a big thing instead of maybe just slicing a bit smaller and looking at what is something that we can test. And I mean, there's the question of the whole agile delivery part, for example, that's also very valuable, but the entire work of even taking the thing and slicing it down, it's fascinating that a lot of people don't even do that.
Yeah.
Is there would you say there's a way of taking it too far? I'm always interested in the boundaries of any approach. Can I slice too small?
I mean, sure, yeah. I mean, there is if you can deliver something within an hour, that's too small. Because I think the transaction cost of having a client close by to check something within an hour is just too high. So yeah, I think the chunks of what you want to end up with are something that a team or depends on the business obviously that you're running, but that is something that you can get feedback fast enough. If you're a freelancer and you are trying out a new business model every day, maybe one day results could be small enough for you. But for most businesses that I work with, we're talking about a team working for a week or two, and that's already a tremendous, like unbelievable. That if for most organizations that we're working with, to deliver something that delivers any kind of meaningful feedback within 2 weeks is just unimaginable. It's like how can we do that?
Nice. Now I can imagine people often don't do this because it's difficult. And even if you have maybe a couple of patterns, it becomes easier. But what are some of the difficulties that you see with clients when they start slicing their work? What is, what trips them up, or what kind of pitfalls do you see there?
So one thing before that, but just because the way you set up the question kind of brought my brain into this thing. It is always hard to argue for this kind of approach, and it makes sense that it's hard to argue. I would love for our listeners to actually be emphasized with everyone who does not buy into this, because imagine you go to any kind of an expert. Imagine you go to a hairdresser and you expect them to, you tell them what you want to do with your hair, and they tell you the price, right? If they tell you, "Ooh, I don't know. Well, let me have a go at it for half an hour, and then we'll reduce the risks, and then we're gonna have another go for half an hour." You will run away, right, from this hairdresser. So there is a normal expectation that if you dealing with someone who is an expert, and you think that what is in front of you is something that just requires expertise, it's totally natural to not accept the fact that you want to go step by step, and you don't know how far you get after a couple of months. It's totally natural.
Let's explore what your intention is with this haircut first. Do you just want to look good, or is there a specific effect that you're aiming for? And now let's talk about all the way this could not work. All the ways that this could, let's do a pre-mortem on your haircut. Yeah. Okay.
That's not going to lend well.
Yeah. I think I'm looking for someone else.
Exactly. Yeah, so if you are embarking on it, on this journey, your question was what are the typical pitfalls? So I would say, the major pitfall that of clients that I work with is basically they don't yet have an infrastructure that actually is set up for this. So large organizations or state organizations, they don't have already kind of a running system for that. So when they end up understanding, oh, so for this slice to be created, we need these five people from very different departments to work with each other. That's something we can't do. And kind of, so if you expect constraints to be already be there, if you expect the rules all to already be there in place before you start, it's not going to work. And so to connect this with this hairdresser thing, if you have not yet had the experience of wasting money and wasting time and being frustrated by trying the other approach, you will not try this one. I think if you have not yet, if you think it's like cutting your hair, there is no magic trick I can do to explain to you this is not a haircut. and being afraid of all of those, so the pitfalls basically are, once you realize, oh, this is what we want to do, to kind of to be stopped by the rules not being there in place. You have to have certain kind of boldness and certain experience of, hey, this is not going to work in a different way. Let's just move on. Let's just do it, and we will create the rules. After our project, we will be able to learn, and we will create kind of a road for the next guys to follow, because we will already have, you know, gone through this jungle and cut down some of the grass in front of us.
So let's assume the organizations you've worked with, they have solved this. They're great at this. They mastered the art of slicing work. What are they going to run into next? What are they going to run into? So what kind of problem are they facing now? I think this is one of the major problems. So if you were to ask me, I think this is at least in the top five, maybe top three of the challenges that organizations have, but there's more. What do you expect? So now we can slice it. We've got the right people together. We have the ability. What is the next problem that we run into?
I think this kind of organization, if they really kind of, if they are master it, what they will have the difficulty with is balancing dealing with actually non-surprising work. That's what I see. So some organizations that especially started off being very innovative, very trying out everywhere, they actually at some point realize, shit, there is things that we do all, like 10 times we've already done this, and every time we are acting as if this is something new. Right. And we are not good at this, getting ourselves checklists of following some procedures. And the difficulty is actually to be able to have people also who understand that there is completely adequately different modes of how we work in the same organization. So that's what I find. This is kind of the next step. So if we've done that, the next step is to actually to learn that sometimes traditional management actually makes total sense, especially yes, if we do something 10 times again over now.
Yeah, now we have the flexibility. Now let's look for where we need stability, and let's be good at both, right?
Yeah.
Not just one. Yeah. Do you have any questions that you feel like people should ask more often when it comes to slicing work?
What is unknown, I think. Whenever you're doing something that is even remotely innovative, so you can do innovation that is innovative technologically, that is innovative that by you offer the same product to a different kind of people. But there is also, if you do not just repeat something that you've done before, there is always something new. And whatever is new, there is some unknown part. And so this is also another question of, you know, what could go wrong is, what is new? Like, what is something new? What is about this project is something that we've never done before. Even if it is, we've built an app before that does exactly the same thing, but for a different company.
Yeah.
We do it for a different company. So what are the things that could be different just about the people that we're working with? What is the unknown is very often a very useful question.
Love that question. I find that it's a dangerous question sometimes in organization, because, you know, I'm paying you to be the expert and to know everything. and now admitting you don't know it. And for me, often in organizations, that's a big switch to just accepting, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know. Let's look into this. Let's handle this. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a big step.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to, again, you won't do this with a client who thinks that everything just works out. You need to have a client who has already at least failed, or a friend of them has failed, or that they have heard that whatever they are going to do is going to fail if they just act as if it was completely predictable.
So now let's assume I've started slicing my work. Mm-hmm. And it's for whatever reason, it's a bit frustrating, or it's more work than I thought. Do you have any kind of encouragement for people? Maybe people listening are already in the process of doing this, or they stopped or paused or whatever you want to call it. What would you tell them to rekindle the fire?
Ooh, that's a good question. So where my I haven't answered this question. It's a good one. So what my where my brain goes to first is, it's fine. So if you feel that you're tired with it, yeah. It's very often a very good. It's a feedback in itself, and you may not yet know what it is that tires you, but that's actually an absolutely legitimate signal of your system, of your body, of your so. First of all, I wouldn't want to just, you know, give you a motivational speech that just, bam, go do it anyway. So I would say something is legitimate about it. And I would invite to basically observe and to also kind of take your time to relax. And what helps me with this kind of things is just simply looking at the alternative. So if you just relax and let things go as if they were planned, You will notice all those. It's like one of the things that once you see it, you cannot unsee it. So once you start thinking about your project in a way of building it step by step with a deliverable by a deliverable, you cannot unsee it. And so once you, if you stop doing this and your project is again going more and more planning, you will notice all those steps where uncertainty is covered by fake acting as if people are certain, and that will give you the drive, from my point of view, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe your own resistance will also tell you something that is that's valuable.
Just this acceptance of that it is difficult. What I find is usually that you have these deep questions in any kind of organization, and you will not find an easy answer to that, and that's precisely what is going to make the difference. Mm-hmm. Because if it were easy, then everybody would just making money mm-hmm. off of this. And so just reaching this point where maybe it's a bit frustrating, that is okay. And maybe just take a break and then tackle it again. I think that's great advice.
That's a very good one. Yeah.
So you've done it. Okay. So you've eradicated this problem of slicing your work from the planet. Everybody's doing it. It's being taught in elementary school. I have two boys in elementary school, and they've learned this. And we're looking back at the great Anton Skornikov, you know, decades ago, who pointed this out. So, what is next for you? Is there something that fascinates you at the moment that you're working on?
So I find what fascinates me personally is actually the whole area of now the personal dimension or the assumption dimension that changes with it. So what we in the whole agile world we all obviously always balance the kind of the actual result thing, and this is the book slicing is about actual delivering actual results. But then once we focus on delivering actual results, we realize, well, it's about working with other people. It's about getting feedback and accepting feedback and all the inner workings that happen with there. And what I want to say that this is not important. I just say it's secondary. We need to start with the results first, but it's by no means unimportant. It's very important. And what I'm most interested in is if we all sliced perfectly, what I would be most interested in is what's going on in ourselves and how can we make it much, much easier for us to accept feedback, not just in a personal level, but also on a team level, organizational level, product level. I think this is the second part that I'm very interested in, and by looking at it on in myself, I think I find a lot of knowledge and very useful techniques coming out of actually psychotherapy right now, very new. A lot of very new things that originated with somatic experiencing, but now moving into neuroaffective relationship model, little NARM. Like those things are effective on a very different level, on a very from the point of view of being effective. And I feel that once we've done that part, if we can kind of leverage those things that psychotherapists have already found out and apply them to our expertise, that will be amazing.
All right, so you just won another spot on this podcast. You have time tomorrow at noon, maybe, because this sounds absolutely fascinating.
Okay, I haven't yet written a book about it, but thank you.
No, but maybe we can just have a casual conversation about this. Yeah, that's something that I also find super interesting. All right, thank you so much for your time. I just want to take this moment just to just recommend your book again. I really have to say, because I reread it for this podcast, and because I'm also an author, and I read all the time. I read dozens of books every year, and I just noticed again how to the point it is and how refined it is, and it's just a pleasure reading. So anybody who's listening, I highly recommend the book, The Art of Slicing Work, because it's great. It provides a lot of value, but it's also just really pleasant. All right. So I hope this session has given you some concrete ideas for your own transformation challenges. At Holisticon, we put into practice what we discuss in Transform Together. We provide companies with holistic support throughout the digital transformation process, from strategy and technology to organizational change. We make our customers more resilient, establish a future-proof, agile culture, create new business models, and inspire people with better services and products. If you are facing similar challenges or wondering how you can implement the ideas from this session in your organization, please feel free to contact us, or maybe Anton first, but then at some point us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de. And do not miss our next Transform Together session on October 22nd at 4 p.m. That's Central European summertime still. I think that's the last day. Our guest will be OKR expert Jansel Zergens. She has developed a fascinating approach to OKRs called the OKR Solar System, and we'll do a deep dive into this topic, complete with an interactive part that is going to make using OKRs much easier. See you then.